So as most of you know, we started 2 weeks ago studying from the second of Dogen's fascicles in Shobo Genzo, manifestation of prajna, and of great prajna, maha prajna, great prajna. And it's both easy and hard to summarize what we talked about the first night, but basically, what Dogen was saying was that Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of compassion and mercy, experienced the manifestation of prajna, deeply experienced the manifestation of prajna, or of a wisdom beyond wisdom, as we translate it, or prajna paramita, sort of the perfection or the highest perfect understanding. So this bodhisattva experienced it and saw that this manifestation of prajna, this manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom, applied to all things, that nothing escaped this manifestation of prajna. And so just so that we're clear, Dogen is talking about emptiness. He's talking about no self. I'm talking about codependent origination. I'm talking about interdependence, however you want to say it. So this, or boundlessness, as we translate the character, boundlessness, emptiness. So this bodhisattva experienced this manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom. It's very important that we get the order clear. It's said in Zen that prajnaparamita is the mother of all Buddhas. So wisdom beyond wisdom, we can think of as the Tathagata Garbha, the womb of the Tathagata. And it means that, so to say that the prajnaparamita or wisdom beyond wisdom is the mother of all Buddhas means that to realize it gives birth to Buddha. To realize it gives birth to Buddha heart, Buddha mind, Buddha life. Because we have Buddha understanding. So this is very fundamental in terms of Zen practice and in terms of the understanding the Buddha's realization. Because the Buddha realized this, we're told. And so it gives birth to everything that is. And if we can say everything that isn't, it gives birth to that too. Nothing escapes this manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom, or emptiness, boundlessness. This is absolutely fundamental to our understanding of the nature of reality as it's been taught to us. So Dogen goes on to tell this story. In the assembly of Shakyamuni Buddha, there was a monk who said to himself, "I will take refuge in this very profound manifestation of prajna." Do you understand what he said? "I will take refuge in emptiness. I will take refuge to this very profound manifestation of prajna." See, we just chanted the Prajna Paramita Heart Sutra. So that's what this teaching is about. We chant this every day or every week. That's what the teaching is about. It's what we just chanted. In the assembly of Shakyamuni Buddha, there was a monk who said to himself, "I will take refuge in this very profound manifestation of prajna. Although nothing arises or perishes in the midst of this manifestation of prajna, the precept skanda, the samadhi skanda, the wisdom skanda, the emancipation skanda, and the emancipation of views skanda are established." That means that the stream, skanda is like an aggregate or grouping, right? So the grouping that makes up the precepts, samadhi, wisdom, emancipation or liberation, and the emancipation of views, all views. I will take refuge. The fruits of entering the stream, of once returning, of no longer returning, and of the arhat are established. So precepts are established, samadhi is established, wisdom is established, emancipation is established, emancipation of views is established because of emptiness. Also, all the fruits of the different stages of realization are established. That's what he's talking about from earlier practices before the Mahayana. So entering the stream, once returning, no longer returning, the arhat are established. The Pratyeka Buddha's enlightenment is established. Unsurpassable, complete enlightenment is established. In Sanskrit, Anyutara Samyak Sambodhi. Unsurpassable, so everything is established because of this manifestation of prajna, of wisdom beyond wisdom. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha treasures are established. The turning of the wondrous Dharma wheel and awakening sentient beings are established. Everything is established because of the manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom called emptiness. This is the part I like the best. The Buddha read the monk's mind. And said to him, "That's right. That's right." The very profound manifestation of prajna is subtle and fathomless. That's what Dogen says the Buddha said to the monk. That's right. That's right. The very profound manifestation of prajna is subtle and fathomless. Dogen goes on. So just to be clear, thanks to emptiness, precepts, samadhi, wisdom, freedom from anguish, vows exist. Everything exists. All practitioners exist. You and I exist. The three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha exist. Everything is established. Dharma is established. So the monk's understanding, Dogen says, was that taking refuge in all things. I want to say that more slowly. The monk's understanding was that taking refuge in all things is taking refuge in prajna that does not arise or perish. At the very moment of taking refuge, the prajna that establishes precepts, samadhi, wisdom, and awakening sentient beings is actualized. At the very moment of taking refuge, all of that is actualized. This prajna is called emptiness. So the actualization of emptiness is established in the moment of taking refuge for the monk. This is the manifestation of prajna that is extremely subtle and fathomless. So before I go on, do you have any question about what Dogen is saying? You do? Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We'll start at the beginning. We're always starting at the beginning. Okay, so let's start with the question. And then we'll get to my question. Yeah, I thought I made a pretty clear presentation. Okay, so
I think it's partly because of the language when you use the word prajna.
Yeah,
it's not kind of right there. In
it's not. So wisdom beyond wisdom.
Well, I use the emptiness. I get it a little more.
Yeah. So the manifestation. So there is prajna. There is wisdom beyond wisdom. You can think of that as the Great Mother. And then there is emptiness that arises in, or as, let's say, the birthing agent of the Mother that gives rise to all things. That's called emptiness. So out of wisdom beyond wisdom comes the functioning, the dynamic that makes everything exist. We could talk about it in terms of the Torah or in terms of, you know, Genesis, so-called. You know. So there is this sort of big void, and then things are brought into existence by the agency of saying, of speaking, right? Let there be. things come into existence. But in Buddhism, there isn't a God that says that. There is the foundation of wisdom beyond wisdom. And on that foundation, emptiness functions and gives birth. And therefore, everything comes into existence. That's what Dogen is teaching. And that's what the Buddha, we're told, realized as part of his realization of the nature of reality. So, is that a little more clear?
We can. The other part of it is taking refuge, so it's like a willingness to get into it.
So, well, this is my question. If we, even if we don't accept it, but if we just try to understand it a little bit, out of the vastness of wisdom, beyond wisdom, so let's just say wisdom, out of the vastness of real understanding, or on the or because of the vastness of real understanding, something manifests, and what manifests is the dynamic that gives birth to all things. So this monk says, I will take refuge in that manifestation. I will take refuge in emptiness. Even though nothing rises or perishes, I will take refuge in it. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha exist, we're told, because of emptiness. I exist, you exist, because of emptiness. This floor exists because of emptiness. The teachings exist because of emptiness. Wisdom exists, samadhi exists, sazen exists. All of the manifestations and levels of realization, so-called, exist. Trees exist, sky exists, because of this manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom called emptiness. The monk says, I will take refuge in that. What would it mean to take refuge in that? That's
well,
my question.
Isn't the closest we get to that when we're meditating?
Keep talking.
When our mind, when we're trying not to use our minds, or trying not to think our thoughts, and therefore closest as we can get to the direct experience of that codependent origination, mm-hmm. if that's the right mm-hmm. phrase.
Yeah.
And well, or I've, you know, whatever's going on, we can take refuge in that, or just mm-hmm. sit.
Mm-hmm. But also, since all things are empty by nature, according to the Buddha teaching, right?
Yeah.
Could we take refuge in anguish?
Yes.
Think about it. Could we take refuge in it?
Well.
Could we take refuge in a tree? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, big anguish, because it's one that we kind of push away, right?
That's right. That's why I asked.
So, however, anguish is kind of like a stream. So, if we follow the stream back to its root, yeah, we can take refuge in anything.
That's right. If we really understand what the functioning of emptiness is, there is nothing that will not take us
back
to the root. Nothing.
I think it's
because of the empty nature of each thing. Please.
Well, I was just going to say there is a stabilization that could occur over years, months, who knows. But it's that stabilizing that then begins to perform that sort of not really a function, but that's just how it shows up. Of yes, being able to sit through anguish, and still more and more not be blown around and suffer because of that anguish. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's what you're saying is very, very important, because remember, I glossed over it quickly because we don't have time, but all the different stages of realization, from entering the stream to no longer returning to the arhat stage of nirvana, etc., are established because of emptiness. It means that at every point along the way, emptiness is there, and we can take refuge no matter where we are. And in that moment, that's called realization. Fully realizing the true nature of what we are, our original nature. It's exactly right. So even though we, like in the Heart Sutra, it says, thus was freed from anguish, right? But the reason that Avalokiteshvara was relieved of anguish, as we chant in the Heart Sutra, is because Avalokiteshvara deeply experienced the manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom. And so Dogen is talking exactly right about, in meditation, in Zazen, we have the ability to reach that foundation. We can do that. And because we can do that, we can touch, maybe like I touch water. We can touch the foundation of reality, which we're kept from by, as you said, being blown back and forth by whatever it is. Could be anguish, could be joy, could be anything. You know, any of the individual streams, form, feeling, perception, inclination, volition, or discernment, when we get stuck on it. This is how attachment and non-attachment relate to emptiness. Is, are we able to actually become free from the functioning of any particular stream, form, feeling, perception, inclination, or discernment, and stabilize? That's why equanimity is an important part of it. Stabilize in emptiness as a manifestation of emptiness itself, which is a manifestation of wisdom. And the answer is yes, we can do that. And there is no special condition. There is no special thing that you have to do. We can do it simply by taking refuge in emptiness, Dogen is saying, no matter in what form it takes. And this is really key. This is really, really important. Yeah, Candace, please.
What do you mean by refuge?
Well, that was my question to all of you. What would it mean to take refuge in emptiness? We've all talked about taking refuge. In fact, many of us have taken refuge. What would it mean to take refuge in emptiness? That's exactly my question.
There's something really heroic and brave, and it's like throwing yourself off a cliff and just trusting that you can fly, to me when you say take refuge in emptiness. You know, because take refuge, you know, there's something you're holding on to. Taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and it's a grounding force. It's something you know can lean back against and rely on. You know?
Mm-hmm. So, what would it mean to take refuge in that very thing that cannot be held on to?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think you know that for me, it's like there's something about jumping off the cliff and realizing you can fly. You know that. There is something in that of letting go of the fear, and the fear is the dualistic thinking. So there's some level of like trusting and breaking through and realizing you're held. You know?
There is a wonderful Zen anecdote that I included in that finger painting on the moon book of mine about a teacher and student walking through the mountains to get to the, you know, to the student's home because the monastery was closed for the winter. And the higher they got in the mountains, it was snowing and foggy and rainy, and it got really terrible. The weather was terrible. And they reached, suddenly they realized they're at the edge of a cliff. And the student was so upset and said, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I've led you to this terrible place. We'll never get to my house. And the teacher said, jump. And the student said, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to die, I don't want you to die. The teacher said, jump! If you value your life, jump now. And he grabbed the student by the hand, and together they leapt into the air. And in the next second, they were walking on the road into the student's home, a village. And the student realized this was the way home. To get home, one must leap. From that very cliff where we think we will die. And that's part of that, that goes very nicely with Dogen's teaching here. I'm not suggesting people jump off cliffs, I should say that. And I do want to say this, I really need to say this, because we've had sad misunderstandings in the Buddhist world and in the Zen world because of the kind of you know, macho, somewhat macho anecdotes and sayings. But I'm not suggesting anyone drop off. I'm suggesting that we sit zazen as if we're jumping off a cliff. You understand the difference? we have had people who misunderstood, for example, killed the Buddha and actually committed suicide because the teaching and their understanding didn't coincide. It's very sad. So I have to say that to you. Yeah, please.
I just wanted to say that to maybe bring it back to Earth, it's more like a birthing process.
Birthing.
We're talking of the womb of all wisdom. And so, therefore, like, this whole world, everything is a manifestation. So, like, in some ways, yeah, taking refuge is like jumping off. But in reality, that's what we've been doing all along. It's just that, you know, this is connecting the, like, you know, connecting the dots, really. Let's say. You know, there's a reason why we practice, really.
That's right. Yeah, to sit zazen is to take refuge. And the question is, are you taking refuge? What does it mean to take refuge? David said, okay, when we sit zazen. Okay, that's good. What about more risky situation? I don't know, I'm sorry.
It has to do with letting go of this idea of myself. Just not worrying about being something.
Yeah.
Or in your travel, you don't have to worry. You're going to get there, right? You're going to be wherever.
Well, or you won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like, what's the big deal?
Yeah. But you know, in fact, we know, because we know from experience as Zen practitioners, that many people will reach that place where, I don't want to say they let go of themselves, where letting go happens. Because I don't want to say there's volition involved. I let go of myself. I think that's nonsense, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, but where letting go happens because of the quality of our concentration and the quality of our mind, right, in zazen. And very often, just as people settle into that samadhi state, because that's the beginning of that state, that quiet, spacious, no longer clinging state, some part withdraws and says, oh, my ear itches, oh, my back hurts, or, oh, I forgot to do this, oh, why did she say that, or why did he do that? You know, we pull back and away because the habituation of the ego attachment is so strong. So to be able to sit through that attachment, like sitting through anguish, because that habituated ego state is a form of suffering, to be able to sit through that, because not because of will, but because of the quality of concentration that we bring to zazen, is what's required. It's really just simply that. It's the quality of concentration. How do you develop it? Every time as you sit, you practice no longer being pulled away. In this moment, now in this moment, now in this moment. And the concentration becomes becomes deeper, more stabilized, right? Becomes steadier, and then there's nothing to do because you are just simply sinking into the fact of not holding on. And that's called concentration. And that's why a right concentration is one of the Eightfold Path. It's one of the paths that gets you there. Or I don't want to even say get you there. I'm very careful about this language that allows that settling to emerge. So to take refuge in emptiness, right, to truly take refuge in it, means to allow the self to return to the place that it actually has never left, its true nature. And zazen is our method of doing that. I want to say this and then we have to stop. It is easier, hard as it is, you all know how difficult it is. It is easier to take refuge in zazen on your pillow than to take refuge in ordinary facts of life. because we don't have the stabilizing practice with it. When someone says to you, you have a fatal disease, you would do anything to just have to sit zazen. Rather than have to deal with that and try to take refuge in emptiness in that conversation. When someone says, your child is really ill, I'm worried about her or his survival, you would sit zazen for a million years rather than have to experience that moment and try to take refuge in that. That's just true. Mm-hmm. When your dog dies, you would rather sit zazen. Believe me, you know this is true. So when we are sitting zazen, this is an opportunity for us to face reality through the practice and take refuge in the manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom. And even though we don't do it to help us deal with these sort of real life situations, somehow it helps. Mm-hmm. Collateral benefit. We talk about collateral damage, this is collateral benefit. Guaranteed. Okay, we have to stop. Thank you, everyone.